Here we are with episode 92 of the Florida Trail Runners Podcast. And this time, we're not talking about a race. This time, we are chatting with JD McGee and Melinda Hooper about their recent FKT attempt for the 57-mile route from the Flamingo Visitor Center in the Everglades to the Dante Fascal Visitor Center in Biscayne National Park. They set the FKT for the mixed team with a time of 18 hours, 37 minutes, and 11 seconds. And their journey, it's awesome, you know. And by the way, you know, Lewis Coco, he has the male supported record for this FKT. So hey, let's jump in and hear all about it.
Hey!
What's up, guys?
But hey, how are you guys feeling from that FKT?
I'm back. I'm feeling strong, I think, mostly.
I'm actually feeling pretty good, but it's been my spring break, so I really haven't had to do anything other than just like rest and recover. I mean, I went and saw my ART, the guy that's been working on my hip today, and he actually said my legs are in really good shape. So I think overall, I came out of it pretty much unscathed. Even my heat rash is pretty much healed up at this point, which is pretty substantial all the way up my legs.
Oh, geez.
Well, that's just Florida for you. That's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's like every summer when I'm training, it's like I always come home after like a Sunday long run or whatever with like heat rash in my armpits.
Yeah. I mean, it's Florida. You're going to get heat rash and you're going to get, you know. We're in a million degrees, so.
But hey, you know, I guess we should probably kick it off with, you know, a little bit about yourselves and, you know, what's that background?
JD, you want to go first?
Oh, I can go first. My name is JD. I started, actually, to be honest with you, I think this weekend will mark 1 year since I've been ultra running. Because I think that it was this weekend last year I ran my first 50K, which would have been the swamp. So, or I should say limp through it because I barely made it. But so I've just been doing this for almost exactly a year, and it's kind of been a ride. I really enjoy it. I really like doing it. And what I really like about it more than, you know, the challenge and the sort of spiritual and emotional benefits of it for me are the people that I get to meet and hang out, which are, you know, people like you, Joseph, and like Melinda. And she's really great. And she's a lot more experienced than me. So I will give her plenty of time to talk about her exploits in the ultra running world.
Yeah, well, let's see. I mean, I've run a few ultras. I've been doing them for a minute. In fact, I'm doing another 100 next weekend. So let's see. I've done, I guess, like 60-something ultras. I've done 10 races of 10 distances of 100 miles or longer. A couple 150s thrown in there. So that's kind of my ultra resume. I don't know what else to say there, just running ultras. And then I was kind of looking at this FKT, at this segment for a while, just kind of looking at doing it just for whatever. And then, Master Coco, the man, put it together as like an official thing. And then did all the legwork, both metaphorically and physically, as far as putting it to registering it as a FKT. And so then JD and I were just kind of able to follow in his footsteps, running after him. And so that was pretty damn cool of him. That was pretty dang cool that he put that together. And then we just followed on it.
Yeah, I was going to say, coming into this, you know, this little journey, the FKT, you know, I was actually really curious about how, like, oh yeah, let's go for it. Like that idea to just go for it.
Well, obviously, Melinda had been thinking about this, and then I think her and I were talking about doing, like, some sort of canoe. Like, I had spring break, and I wanted to get down to the Everglades and do some canoeing. I wanted to see if she wanted to join me, and she was like, well, I've been thinking about doing this. Let's do this instead, and I was like, yeah, that sounds great. Let's do it. I think that was about – did I get that right, Melinda?
That's pretty much how it rolled out. Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much – you know, I live literally along the route. I run parts of it on a regular basis. Obviously not the Everglades part of it, but the part that's here in Homestead. So that appealed to me. But just the fascination of connecting this segment, connecting two of these great landmarks, these national parks, was really fascinating. Yeah, so when JD was like, hey, I'm going to come down there, and I'm like, well, they do have this category where you can do mixed gender and have two people travel it together. So want to join me? Because we can do this together and we get along, and it would be fascinating and super fun to do it.
Just a little bit different than the kayaking or canoeing.
Just kind of the same idea. Just weave it different.
It is. It's the same thing. It's just on foot, you know? I mean, you're just walking instead of paddling and running and I mean, you're still going to be dodging horse flies and like cooking in the sun and, you know, figuring out your whole water situation. So, yeah, it's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, get a good long run in that Keys 100 training.
Hey, that was how I was looking at it. You know, this is great. You know, training for the Keys, this is a great sort of train and run for that. It's you know, it's a road run. It wasn't supposed to be, we kept looking at the weather, and it wasn't supposed to be as hot as it ended up being. Like, I think that was something that kind of happened there at the very end. It looked like it was going to be a lot cooler, but it was definitely not cooler. Like, I think the feels like was probably in the 90s, I would say, there about middle of the day.
Oh yeah. I would concur with that. It was definitely hot out there.
And there's no so the reason why it was good training for the Keys, and the thing that makes it super difficult is there is literally no shade the entire route. That's 58.5 miles, no shade whatsoever. Unless we got lucky, like in the morning, we got lucky and we had like some cloud cover. So there was like some passing cloud that offered us kind of like a respite from the sun. And then at a certain point, the clouds went away and it was just sunlight, like blaring sun and asphalt.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, that's correct. I mean, there's zero trees, zero shade from anything. You know, at one point we got like, I'm huddled by like the fence posts and stuff. And I'm like, no, yeah. No, there's shade here. There's shade from like these fence posts.
we're like wandering down this like super busy road, and there's no shoulder, and there's like, you know, there's this like kind of grass way along the side, but it's basically like people's front yards. And I'm just like kind of wandering in the grass, and she's like, what are we doing? Get over here in the shade. And like right next to the fence where the bushes had grown up on the fence, there was like a little like 4 foot kind of path of shade along this fence. And we're just kind of like right up next to this fence, stumbling along the highway there.
Spoiler alert, it was not really shade, but it felt like shade. It was like the best we could do.
Yeah, anything to get those, you know, those five less degrees.
Yeah.
Oh, not, my God. Like,
less degrees. It was not five less degrees.
Yeah. And, like, asphalt absorbs heat.
So, since Louis Coco did this, they have also laid down some fresh pavement heading out to Flamingo in the Everglades. So it is black pavement out there, which when that sun came up was super hot. Super duper hot. Not only radiating down, but then as it reflected up, and it was super hot. So we just counted the minutes until we could get off of it, and it's basically that entire road heading out there is that extra hot black pavement. So anybody that looks to do this after us, count on that as a little gift.
And you didn't because we were just on that black pavement, we really didn't notice the difference until like at one point the black pavement ends and it goes back to the kind of lighter grayish paving, and the temperature difference was astounding. Like you could just feel the difference just in between the color of the darker asphalt, the newer black asphalt, and then the lighter kind of light grayish, like blue grayish. The difference was insane. Like it was like a relief just getting on off of that black pavement and onto like the kind of regular older pavement.
Yeah. So with all the heat that you've got, like obviously you have to kind of have a game plan for how you're going to do this. You know, what did you guys do? You know, did you drop off supplies, or how did you plan it?
Look, you're don't ask me about this because Melinda is, if you say logistics, she's gonna get excited because that's her thing, man. I'm still looking because I'm working on a blog right now, you know, like writing about it. And I'm looking at the printout of all the different spreadsheets, and she's got maps, spreadsheets. She like figured out our pace. I'm looking at one right now that has the temperature by hour and if it was going to be cloudy, partly cloudy. So as far as planning goes, that's her. I'm going to just say expertise, because she planned it down to the wire. Like, it was pretty amazing, actually.
Yeah, that's kind of my jam. That's like my forte, is putting all the spreadsheets and the logistics together. I love that kind of stuff. So
yeah, when you're putting your own drops down, you know, versus other people coming out to help, that kind of makes the difference between self-supported and supported, right?
Yeah, you know, even down to we did this self-supported, which meant that we put drops out there, and we used the way that they do it for the Just Survive, where they put buckets out with your drops out with the supplies you're going to be using. So I had it all mapped out where we were going to have our buckets out, and we filled them with the supplies we were going to need: our electrolytes, our water, our food, and they're roughly every 5 miles apart. So we hid them back in where there was underbrush, and I just put our information on them in case any of the forestry people or the people associated with the Park Service saw them, and just use those as our aid stations as we traveled through. And that worked out really, really well, because, you know, we put bug spray and sunscreen where we thought we'd need it.
So sunscreen in all of them?
Well, we did. We had them. I mean, we knew when the sun was, you know, we knew when we were starting. By we, I mean, Melinda knew when we were starting. I was just kind of tagging along and making bad pun jokes. But so we knew when we were starting, and we knew when the sun was going to come up. So we knew when the bugs would start to get bad. And then we knew when we were going to probably need sunscreen, and when we were going to have to put more sunscreen on because we had sweated it off, and then so on and so forth. So we were able to spread that stuff out through the buckets. And the same thing with our calories, because we knew when we would start to need more calories, and so we were able to split things up and have certain food here and certain food there. And then, you know, electrolytes, and then of course Melinda had to have her body armor, which was the secret weapon for the whole trip for her.
yep. But
that's a whole other issue.
Yeah, that was a whole thing.
But it worked out. It worked out. The buckets worked out so well. None of them were messed with. We did have some help from a squash. One of the buckets we thought we had lost, a squash helped us find it. And by squash, I mean a little vegetable was pointing at the bucket. and the byproduct seaweeds, we set out the first two buckets the day before, and then the rest of the buckets we set up as we were driving out the Flamingo at midnight or whenever it was, 11 o'clock at night. And just the buckets sitting out overnight, they retained the coolness inside of the buckets, like acted like an insulator, almost like a cooler. And so the water and the scratch and everything that we had in the buckets was basically cool. So we would get to these, it was hot, and we would get to these buckets and the water would be cool. So it wasn't like we were drinking hot water or anything like that, or hot scratch along the way. So the buckets just, they worked phenomenally well for what we were doing. And we would just, you know, we'd get to the bucket and, hey, man, peel off the lid, fill up what we need to fill up, grab what we need to grab, and then shut the bucket back up, throw it back in the woods, and then head off. In theory, that's how it worked.
Yeah, yeah.
And by the way, somebody found at least two of our buckets in the Everglades Park and didn't do anything other than move them and look at them, because they definitely were moved from where we had put them back. But none of the stuff was taken out of them. And some of those buckets were pretty fairly obviously there. I mean, they're big orange buckets. like once you get out of the park, like some of the places we left those buckets were pretty trashed up anyways. So the buckets just kind of blended in with the other like tires and things like kind of around, but and random trash. But in the, you know, the park itself is pretty immaculate. Like, there's not a lot of trash. In fact, I think the only thing that we found was a mayonnaise packet. That was Melinda.
Yes. My emotional support mayonnaise packet. Yes.
Yeah. The emotional support Mayonnaise packet.
Yeah. What did you label the buckets with, or what would you write on them?
We labeled them in numerical order, like where to drop them, and that helped us to keep track also of what was going in them, so where they were going, but then also like how many calories we were going to need and where to put bug spray and sunscreen and stuff. And then I put my phone number on them, and the date, so that if a park ranger or somebody did see them, they would see that, you know, what date they were out there. And then it had my phone number on them, so if anybody did have questions, it had my name and number on it. And so Sunday morning, when we were going out to get them, I didn't have cell service out there, but after we got out, I had gotten a phone call from a Marathon in the Keys, from a Marathon phone number. So we suspect that somebody did find them and gave my phone a call. They didn't leave a message, but it just verifying that it was.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were definitely two of them had definitely been moved. Like someone had pulled them out, maybe even opened them up and looked at them and put them back. Now, you know, at that point, what they would have found was just some bottles of water and some scratch, you know, the scratch that Melinda didn't drink.
Full bottles of scratch, full bottles.
Oh, what's this? Two more full bottles of scratch, like every time while we were going back.
Full bottles. Yeah, two very nice drivers out of two nice drivers that saved our faith and humanity out there. Lots of angry drivers, but two people that tried to stop and help us. One offered us water, and like not just like rudely offered, just genuinely tried to give us water. And then another human pulled over and tried to give us a ride, just checked to see if we need anything. So those nice humans kind of balance off the people that were trying to run us over.
They thought you ran out of gas down the road.
No, he said that he'd seen us walking down the road, and he said, he's like, I can kind of tell that you guys are, like, we didn't look like we'd run out of gas. We had our packs and everything. We looked like we were doing a thing, but, you know, and then when we told him, he seemed interested. He didn't seem like, okay, you guys are insane. Maybe he thought it. I don't know. But we were kind of delirious at that point, but, you know. I'd say I'll take two people being nice. That's better than nothing.
You know, there were some people, you know, were driving around, you know, like some people were like making an effort to not try and kill us. But some people, I mean, there were some people literally that came within feet. And when I say feet of us going 60 and 70 miles an hour, like just not slowing down. And it was pretty sketchy. A couple times was pretty sketchy, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, you got your buckets, you got the cars whizzing by, but you still have a solid plan.
But you know, the best laid plans, things do still go awry. You know, I the problem that I ran into is, I mean, I'm obviously not my first rodeo. I know how to take in calories and nutrition, obviously, until I don't, which in this one, and as most of us, I think, know, when your calories start to go awry, then you don't take in calories because you're not taking in calories because you don't take, and it's just this vicious cycle. So somewhere in the Everglades, I stopped taking in my proper calories and I stopped drinking scratch, and I just didn't drink it. So I had made up all this really great electrolytes and all this really great scratch. And when we went to check on our buckets the next day, we realized I just never drank any of it. So the joke with the body armor is I basically did this whole trip on 12 body armors. Well, not even, I guess I didn't even drink the last couple, but
no. And that was, I think both of us were underfueled. I definitely didn't drink enough water, and I know it's like it was cool the first, you know, the first 4 or 5 hours before sunrise, it was pretty cool out there, temperature wise. And so, I wasn't drinking a lot of, fluid. And I knew I needed to kind of prehydrate. And so we get to the buckets and I would chug scratch because I had some left. And the problem with doing that is then I wouldn't eat. And then you get to the point where once it gets hot, you don't feel like eating because your stomach is, you know, you start to get nausea from the heat and also just from the exertion, and your body doesn't want to devote the resources to digesting food. So you just don't eat. And you need food, and because you need food, then you get a tummy ache, like Melinda was saying, and it's like a vicious circle. And we pretty much probably because of that, the miles, once we got out of the park, so that was what, mile 39, I think, is when you leave the park. So the miles from where we left the park to where we got to the fruit stand, the mega fruit stand, Robert is here. Which I think is, Linda, how far is that? Like 6 or 7 miles?
It's like six and a half miles. Yep.
It's first, it seemed like 20 miles because mm-hmm. it's, you know, you're dodging. It's like there's no shoulder on the road. So you're basically walking into traffic. And then there's no shade. And you're walking through like agricultural land, and they were out there like plowing and getting crops ready, and it was dusty, and there were all these chemicals in the air, and both of us were having like various issues.
And our nutrition's off at that point, but you know, we would think well, when we get to Roberts, we're going to be able to have our smoothies. And instead of, you know, just focusing on, well, what we had on us or the one bucket that we had along the way, our brains were so kind of out of nutrition and stuff at that point. We're just like, oh, the oasis, the mecca that's going to be Robert is here in the fruit stand to be able to have our smoothies, which, you know, again, it's ultra. You kind of get a little delirious and you're not thinking straight.
And then we get to Robert is here, and there's like 858 people in line for smoothies. Like the line is literally, because it's Saturday. It's like the weekend in the afternoon, and the line for smoothies is literally like wrapping around the whole stand, the whole inside of the place, and then back outside, like almost to the road. So we're like, well, we're not going to stop and wait for this. And so, you know, the whole time we've been looking forward to getting a smoothie there, and then we couldn't even get a smoothie. And so so I was like, well, we'll get some ice cream when we get to the CVS or the Walgreens. And Melinda's like, no, we're stopping at the gas station right up the road. We're not going to, I'm not going to make it. And that gas station, that was the game changer. The all time game changer was like this, yeah, like ghetto, like Circle K that we stopped at. Because yeah. First, go ahead.
Linda. No, I was going to say, sometimes, you know, you make decisions like that and they just wind up like changing everything. So yeah, that wound up being like the best choice we could have made.
Oh my God. Like I'm waiting like to get slushies. I haven't had a slushie. I don't even know how long it's been since I've had a slushie. It's been decades. And like, I'm waiting there, and there's like a girl in front of me, and she's like mixing them up. Like she was putting cherry in one, and I was like, oh, I can have a cherry Dr. Pepper slushie. It was the greatest thing. And then like, we're checking out, and we've got like, our arms are full of like water and Gatorades and like slushies and all this stuff. And then I look over and there's bananas, and I was like, oh, let's have a banana. And Linda was like, oh, banana, that sounds great. And so the guy's looking at us like we're crazy. And then we went around and we're like, God, where can we, I'm like, Melinda, we need some shade. She's like, let's walk around the side. And we end up like sitting like around the side of this gas station, like by the dumpster, like back, like staring at this field and graffiti. And we're just like sitting there, and we're all like sprawled out, like drinking our slushies and like putting A and D ointment on. And Melinda was like soaking her shirt, and who knows what we looked like, but homeless people, I guess.
And obviously, of course, before you get to the homeless stage of this whole thing, you know, the route starts out at the Flamingo Visitor Center in the Everglades National Park. You head out on a route, or where do you go?
It's like 9336. It's the Ingram Highway.
Yeah, it's the only road out of there. And I mean, it's gorgeous. We headed out at night. We left at 1 a.m. And even though you think, I mean, like, so it was a full moon earlier in the week. So the moon is still up there. It's still really beautiful. And it was gorgeous. Like we have everything all to ourselves, even though every once in a while there's a car out there, a truck. You can hear them from miles away, and you can see them from miles and miles away. So basically we just have this whole park to ourselves, and it's amazing. You can hear everything out there when there's anything to hear, but it's basically just silent and just amazing. It's lovely.
Yeah, because eventually you make it to that that West Lake viewpoint, which I think it's like 7 or 8 miles in. It's super early into this, but how did those miles go?
Oh, those early miles, well, especially while it was still dark, those miles were just flying by.
Yeah, those models peeled by pretty fast. There are several reasons. One is we were excited. Like, we just kept looking at each other like, we're really doing this. It's 1 a.m. and we're in the Everglades, just like walking down the road, you know. So we were excited about all that. And then, of course, just being out there and it's dark. And so because it's so dark, you know, we've got our headlamps, and I've got my Nox gear has like a little like a chest lamp, but your line of sight is still extraordinarily limited. And so you have no idea, like those roads in Everglades National Park are just miles and miles of straight. So when it's light, you can just see straight down that road forever, and you can see how far you have to go, but at night you can't see it. So you're just going, and so it makes it go by a lot faster because you don't have like that expectation of distance and time to attain that distance. And then, and plus two, for the first part of this, we were running a lot more because right. It was still cooler. I'm having some kind of soleus and hip issues that have extended down into my IT band. So my ability to like run extended different distances without significant pain is still fairly limited right now as I slowly get this worked out. So those first, God, I don't know, man, like the first three buckets went by really quickly. Like I just remember being like, wow, we're already at the next bucket.
Right, right. That time just flew by. I couldn't believe, I was like, this is just chugging by.
And then that stopped pretty quickly once the sun came up. Oh, yeah. like we're like, oh, look, the sunrise. It's really beautiful. And we found the Z tree. And we were like, you know, videotaping I was videoing the sunrise. And then I think Melinda was like, is this a horsefly? I think she said something like that. And like the horseflies came out, and that was at that point on, there was just one kind of obstacle or struggle or another for like basically the rest of the miles. The horseflies were unforeseen.
Yes.
As I like to point out multiple times.
Yes, I will take the hit on that one. I did not account for the horse flies.
What? You didn't decide to pack your dryer sheets?
There are not enough dryer sheets in the world. No, they're not.
there was a cloud of them because Melinda was usually in front of me most of the time, and there was a cloud of them around her constantly. Like she's just swatting, they were pretty gnarly, man, and they kept up until that sun got up a good ways and really started cooking. They followed us and harassed us, and it was a pretty decent harassment. I got tagged. I mean, one bit me like one. They would try to get at your eyeballs. One stung me like in between my fingers. Like, how did it even get there? All of a sudden I'm like, oh God. And I think they ate all the mosquitoes, because I don't remember really ever getting bothered by mosquitoes. So nope. I think the horse flies ate the mosquitoes and then tried to eat us. I think what happened.
I think that's a legit theory, yes.
One of the other parts that was pretty gnarly for me, and then maybe this is TMI, but from Long Pine Key Campground, like Long Pine Key, like its name says, is basically like a big pine hammock. It's like a pineland hammock. And when you get out of that, the road goes back into like the sawgrass kind of savanna. And there is nowhere to go to the bathroom. And it's daylight, and there are tourists buzzing up and down that road. And so if you get out of the where you have a chance to go in the woods to do something, and you get on that road, your only choice is to basically just struggle with it until you get to the visitor center. And I remember Melinda saying, look, it looks like 4 miles on the map, but it's going to seem like 8. And like, it really was like, it just seemed to take forever. And you, like, I was hungry and I was afraid to eat and I was thirsty and I was afraid to drink. And I just really had, and there's nowhere to go to the bathroom. Like, you would literally have to go into the swamp, into the grass, and in with the alligators. We saw them in there. There was nowhere to go. So you're just kind of trapped. And that part for me internally was pretty miserable until we got to that visitor center. And the visitor center was like a godsend. That place was amazing just to get to a bathroom. Which, just to let everybody, in case you're going to try this, you're not going to get to a bathroom until you get to the visitor center. So right. You have Flamingo.
It's your only bathroom.
So 49 miles, you have one legitimate bathroom. So keep that in mind.
Yeah. So if you need to know, if you need to know all this, I mean, I've got it all mapped out. Yeah. You do this, if you do this solo, you know, if you do this self-supported, like you have to like have all this stuff worked out, because nutrition and all these logistics really come into play, because there's nothing out there. There's no recourse if you don't have it all worked out.
And not only is there no recourse, there's really no cell phone signal out there either. So you're kind of isolated to a certain extent. If you're going to do it the way we did it, which is self-supported, you know, if you had someone crewing you or something like that, or someone that was in a vehicle, it'd be one thing. But you're out there, and you know, once you're 15 miles, you know, you're equidistant from start, or you're equidistant from either the marina where you can get something, or the visitor center where you can get something. So, once you get out, and once you're committed to it, you're committed to it. Like, you got to go or you got to return, but either way, you're going to still be putting miles on.
Yeah, because after you hit that visitor center, obviously you finally start to leave the actual Everglades National Park, and it's just farms and fields. And you know, how did those miles go as you're, you know, before you made your way into that Homestead/Florida City area?
Those miles were horrible.
Those were the worst miles. Right when you leave the park, before you actually get into like Homestead, so you leave the park, and then your next, I'd say, landmark thing will be when you come to the prison, because that's when you make the turn that'll ultimately lead you into Florida City Homestead area. But those miles right before you make that turn are the worst. There's no shoulder of the road. The edge of the road is all farmland, or there's nothing there. So you have to run on the road, and it is dangerous. There's angry drivers. It is terrible. I mean, I know JD's going to agree with me. Those were the worst miles ever.
Well, because first, some of the drivers are actually legitimately trying to hit you. Yeah. Like, they're like giving us like throwing their hands up in the air, like, what are you guys doing? And, you know, by law, if you are on a road and there is no shoulder and you are a pedestrian, you have to walk in the road, fit in the traffic. Like, that's the law. So, but man, these people, they like, even like, I understand, like, if there's cars coming both ways, and but they wouldn't slow down. And some of them, even when they could have gotten over to go around us, just kind of buzzed right by us. So you're dealing with that. And then, like I had said before, they were, even though it was a Saturday, they were tilling up the fields and getting ready to set their crops. And so the dust, and then of course the chemicals, they were spraying some of the crops and stuff like that. It played absolute havoc with, like, my throat was completely like scratched up, like wanting to close up. Like, it was just from the dust and the chemicals, you know, it was hard to breathe. And then Melinda had some issues with her asthma, and you add on top of that just the absolute heat. And those were some brutal, those were some absolutely brutal miles. I'm not even going to lie. Those were some of the miles that were the toughest.
Yeah. Yeah. I told JD, honestly, I don't know if I would have continued on. I mean, there's a good chance either I would have dropped at the entrance to the park, or dropped Robert is here if I hadn't had his company. Because it was that brutal right there.
Yeah, it was even rounding the corner and getting on that straightaway that goes down to Roberters here, where we kind of were able to get off the road a little bit, like into the grass, and we even found some little like kind of makeshift shade along the fence. Even that just seemed to take forever, because it was hard to make time. We couldn't really walk, like you couldn't power hike because it was the grass. Now, ultimately, I think that moving off the pavement and onto the grass helped out with the fatigue, like in our legs, because it was just the work in different muscles. And it kind of gave a break from just using those same muscles repetitively, like if you're just power hiking on the road. And then also kind of the softness of the ground, just kind of easing up on your joints a little bit, the wear and tear. But but it was brutal. And then, you know, in our minds the whole time, we're just thinking about, and I don't know if you've ever been to Roberta's here, you could Google it or whatever, but they have the absolute best smoothies and milkshakes on the planet. And when I say it's a fruit stand, I mean, it's this massive complex. They have like emus and they have like birds and they have like a band. They had a band playing. These guys were like playing like Jimmy Buffett and like Grateful Dead. And, that was like our oasis. Like we were just like, oh God, everything will be okay when we get there. If we can just get there, and we get there and it's just like so many people and it's so disorienting. And like for us to wait to get a smoothie, it would have been like an hour. And so we're like, you know what, we're just going to keep going. And that ended up working out in our favor because the gas station was so much more relaxing. We were able to sit on the side, even though it smelled like urine, and we were basically sitting next to a dumpster. But it was just so fun. Like we just sat there just cracking jokes and we were just half out of our minds. You know, we're, you know, 48 miles into it or something like that at that point, or 47, I think 47 and a half. So, those miles are brutal. Then once we got into, so once we crossed over US 1, it's sidewalk for a good bit. So once we actually got on the sidewalk, it was nice because you could kind of relax. Like you're constantly, when you're walking into traffic, and you have nowhere to go, you're under constant stress, and it's like a low to mid grade to even like a high grade stress. And it really takes it out of you a lot more than probably you would think just sitting at home. But when you're actually there and there's just constantly cars buzzing by, is this car going to slow down? Oh my God, that car almost hit me. To finally get on the sidewalk was such a massive relief. And I think Melinda would probably agree on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But then by the time, let's see when we got, I know that by the time we got to that last park, we were both pretty much done. And I will tell you that if it hadn't been for Melinda, I would not have made it to the end because I was just done with the whole ordeal by the time we got on that last stretch. I was like, you're walking too fast. Where the F is this freaking sign? this is BS. I was definitely Mr. Grumpy Pants there at the end.
That's why having a partner made it so much fun, though. That's what helped balance it out.
Yeah, because once you hit that Palm Avenue, it's like you're on that final stretch. You know, how did those miles go? You know, those final miles, how did they go leading into that Dante Fascal Visitor Center?
So you take that We were on the gravel part, the dirt road, we weren't on that road of death, as I like to call it, the paved portion. And then as we head up actually into Biscayne, heading up to the visitor center, I didn't really want to break JD's heart, but I know that like once you actually cross it, it's still that road. And when he finally realized how long it was, yeah, it was not a nice moment.
And then it's like the sun is setting. Oh, the horse flies came back.
Oh yeah, I forgot about the horse flies.
The horse flies all of a sudden came back. So I've never gone that far before. Like 50 miles was like I've only done 50 miles once. And so anything over 50 miles was something new for my body, and everything on my body hurt except for my earlobes. And then we're on this old, dilapidated road on the other side, and there's little holes in it, and the sun's going down and the horse flies are out. And she's like, we just have to make it to that sign there. But that wasn't true. It was still another 2 miles, another mile past the sign. And Melinda just starts, she just keeps going faster. Like I can barely make it. And I look down at my watch and she's at 16, she's just trucking along. And I'm like, Melinda, you've got to slow down.
No. You did not say it like that. That sounds so nice, JD.
Yeah. I'm editing it for public consumption. And then the bugs in the headlamp. We had to take our headlamps off our head because there were so many bugs out that you were sucking them down your mouth where they were getting up in the headlamp. So we had to hold the headlamps in our hands down at our waist so that we weren't swallowing bugs after the sun went down. And then we finally got like onto the road that goes into the park. And, you know, we hopped the gate because the park's closed. And, you know, we had permission. We didn't even talk about this. We had to get permission to leave Melinda's vehicle at Biscayne because we took my truck so we could put the buckets in it. My truck was down at Flamingo, but we had to leave her car the day before up at Biscayne. And that was a whole thing because they looked at us like we were nuts. Like we were in there trying to explain to them what we're trying to do. And the guy is just like, what? And then he said something about like, we're like, well, what do you do when people go camping? And they're like, well, they make a float plan. And Melinda's eyes got all bright and she's like, float plan? I've got a plan. And so, so anyways, like they had to get like a ranger in there, and then the ranger had to call like three other people. We finally got all the permissions and we did the paperwork. So we were good as far as like, we wouldn't have gotten in trouble, but we still had to hop the gate. And then it's still, how far is that, Melinda, from the gate all the way back to the visitor center?
That's at least, that's like a half mile.
Yeah, it seemed like 6 miles. Half mile.
Like I would tell JD, I was like, so from here, it's somewhere between a half mile and 4 miles. Like, you know, anywhere, it could be anywhere between those distances.
It was so long. I was just like, where the F is this visitor center? I think I even said it out loud a couple times.
Yeah.
Where the F is this place? Oh <my God. laughs> I was so done with life at that point. It was like 18 and a half hours. We've just been like doing this, like just like walking and running and eating and like, oh God, and getting eaten by horse flies. And it was absolutely amazing. I would do it again in a heartbeat.
It was by far the coolest experience. Like, so cool. I still can't wrap my head around it. And I still think about it. And I'm like, what a truly epic thing to do.
Yeah. And like, here's the crazy thing. You know, you're done with it. It's an FKT. There's no bells, no whistles, no award.
I know.
Feel just to make it there.
That's what makes it even better, because to me, that's just the true spirit of it. Yeah, just the fact that there isn't anything, any, you know, bells and I mean, one of the things I love about ultra running is like that you don't, you know, there's not a participation medal. I mean, sometimes there is, but most of the time there's not. You just cross the finish and it's like, hey, cool, you did this thing. Yay. That's awesome. And, you know, there's a hug and stuff. But this is that even to a different level.
Yeah, I be honest with you, I kind of like it better that it's not like an official race or, you know, I think Melinda and I even talked about that at one point. Like, look, man, we had no, you know, other than gas and then, you know, what it cost to get the buckets, which was really an investment. And then basically just water and, you know, I bought some beef jerky and some M&Ms. I mean, the cost was basically nothing. To have that kind of experience and to do it of your own volition and not be motivated by like a pace or a time or by beating somebody else or by getting a buckle or any of these other things, that made what you take away from it really to be more of the experience and the memories. And I think that made it that much more important because there wasn't a physical object at the end to get. Yeah, like it was just, it makes it a lot more about the experience. And I think it makes it a lot more special because, you know, when you sign up for a race, there's a part of you that's like, well, I signed up for it, I paid for it, now I got to do it. And there was no motivation. There was no, like, you know, like if we wanted to drop, we would just drop. Like, who would even know? We didn't even tell anybody we were doing this.
Correct. Yeah. So, I mean, there was no one was holding us accountable for this. There was no reason why we had to do it.
Other than the park rangers with your float plan.
No, that's true. Yes, that is a fact.
he was like, yeah, so that's like 100 miles, isn't it? That guy was, what was his name? That guy was so nice.
Oh,
was,
like, I can't remember his like name, but I mean, if he by some wild chance hears this, I mean, much appreciation to him for making all those calls and making sure that, you know, the logistics played out so we could leave my car there and let this happen. So, you know, thank you, Park Service people, for your help, the role that you did play in this.
Hey, do you guys know what your total elevation was for this journey?
Oh, it was like 141 feet, I think, for 56 miles. I can tell you in a second. I get my hold on. I'll pull up my Garmin here. I think it was only like 141 feet for 58.5 miles.
Yeah, because I think on Strava it says like 171.
Yeah, I think that's right. It wasn't much. It was under 200. I can tell you that.
Yeah, I was like,
the most Florida thing ever.
Oh yeah, totally.
Oh my god, so speaking of elevation, we got to a point where we actually had to like climb over like a railing, like a guardrail, like out by the speedway. We're going up the sidewalk and there's a coming out of the speedway, there's like a guardrail where the main road that goes into the speedway meets up with the highway. And like it was like a dilemma. We're like, Jesus, I don't want to climb over that thing. Like, I'd have to lift my leg and like somehow get over this guardrail. Well, I don't want to walk around it either. You know, it's like 50 feet to walk around the thing. So that's where we were at as far as elevation goes. Like, we didn't even want to deal with a guardrail.
Yeah, we kind of sat there and like weighed the pros and cons of it. It's like, oh, wow, I don't know. Do we want to like climb over this whole? Oh, but we could walk around it. That's really far, though. You reached that whole point in that.
It was pretty cool. Oh, 100 and yeah, you're right, Joseph. 174 feet. I've got 174 feet of total elevation for 58.67 miles.
Yeah, you're right. Very Florida. A very Florida elevation map there.
Yeah, that's about as Florida as you can get. There, we even go over a bridge. Like, there's not even a, you know, in the Keys, you've got some bridges, so you're going to get some pretty decent elevation there. Yeah, it's definitely yeah, nice and flat.
Yeah, so if you had any advice for someone who's either planning or has even considered to go for an FKT, I guess here in Florida, or even I guess outside of Florida, you know, but what would that advice be?
Organization. Like, have a
plan. I was going to get Melinda to plan it for you. That's my advice. Whatever she asks, and let her spreadsheet it for you. There's my advice.
Seriously, though, have a plan, because I mean, we would talk about it. The horse flies kept coming up as like the big unknown or the big thing that wasn't planned for. But you want to have as many variables thought out going into it, because you're going into just complete unknown territory. We had the benefit that at least we were on pavement, but as we've said, in the Everglades, no cell service. You're away from humanity. You're not going to be able to just like call an Uber or somebody to come pick you up or swing by a store for all that mileage. And you want to be able to have as many things available, or as many provisions and all the logistics thought out in advance, so you just don't have to think. Like, when we get to the buckets and we'd open them and, oh, there's sunscreen sitting there. I remember the one, there was bug spray, and we're like, oh, we don't need it. And then we got, you know, 100 yards past that, and we hit the bugs. And we're like, oh my gosh, the reason why there was bug spray in there is because non-race brain us thought we were going to need bug spray. Let's not second guess ourselves, because when we were able to think, we made all these plans.
Yeah, I think that was the one we actually turned around and went back for. Yep, the bug spray.
It is. Yeah. It is. So you want to just like have a plan, and then that way when you're running these things, you can just be in, you can just be enjoying the moment and not have to think.
Yeah, I would say, you know, I'm not the most experienced ultra runner or running person in general. But I've done quite a bit of hiking and quite a bit of backpacking over the years. And planning and preparation is going to trump almost anything else in the long run. And there's no kind of feeling like having what you need when you need it. And now whether you actually use the stuff ultimately, that depends sort of on the circumstances when you're out there. Like, you know, we had but we had the scratch, we had the calories, you know, that we didn't utilize them properly while we was out there was due to circumstances and situational, but we still had the stuff, and that's what's important. There was not any other than the horse fly, which we had bug spray. I mean, right. we didn't get killed by the horse flies. Nothing happened out there that we weren't prepared for or didn't know how to handle.
Correct.
Like even when we got to Robert is here and we couldn't get what we needed, you know, drinks or anything else at Robert is here. We knew that right up the road, another mile or a mile and a half, there was another gas station. So it was very easy for us to be like, all right, look, we're not going to get what we need here. Let's just go to this next gas station. It's just a mile up the road. We can make it that much further because we already knew it ahead of time. So, you know, and like Melinda was saying, the more decisions you can kind of take away from race brain, the better off you are. The more decisions you can make when you're not out there actually doing it, the better off you are.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I guess we can kind of wrap it up with kind of the classic, the good, the bad, and the ugly. You know, how was it for the Everglades to Biscayne Bay?
Amazing. You know, we joked that this was, what, the Bay to Bay 90K or something?
Bay to Bay 92K.
And so we got to see, you know, two really beautiful parts of Florida in a really unique way that very few people are ever going to have that experience. And I think that, you know, nothing truly remarkable will ever happen without you earning it and working hard for it. And we just had that experience of really working hard and struggling some to have something really remarkable. I'm grateful for it. I'm really grateful that I had somebody so awesome to share that experience with.
Yeah, I'm going to agree like 10,000%. You know, seeing the Everglades unfold at, you know, 3 or 4 miles an hour, the walking, and the amount of detail that you get to see and the things you get to notice is so much different than when you're, even if you were driving slow at 30 or 35 miles an hour, just the amount of detail you're able to take in when you're moving that slowly is unbelievable. I would say for me, the good was by far the company. We had so much fun, so many jokes, just cracking on each other, cracking on different things. Cracking on drivers. I mean, we had the best time. And I think that was, the company was almost more important than anything else. Like, we just had the best time. And that extended into us being able to support each other. Because we were having such a good time that the times that either one of us started to kind of waver a little bit in our determination, the other one was able to just hop right in there. Because we kept our moods up the whole time. I think the bad was that I'm going to say the heat was pretty bad. The heat, and it's not that it's that we're not heat acclimated yet. This is March and we're coming out of the colder months. And so that was a big blast of heat to come right into without sort of being acclimated to it. And so I think that kind of got to us, at least it got to me a little more than I thought it would. And I yeah. Like heat. Like, I prefer heat. And then the ugly for me was the last like 4 miles. It was ugly in my head. It was ugly in the pain. I acted ugly. I mean, I know that's going to happen, but, you know, I'd prefer to act with have a little more manners, maybe. I don't know. Like, not be such a grumpy pants. So there's my good, bad, and ugly. And the big owl that flew across the road, that was pretty cool too.
Yeah, that was good stuff. That was good stuff.
I remember when my car broke down once in the Everglades, and off in the distance from my headlights, I could see the panther crossing sign, and I was like, oh, great, perfect spot to break down.
Oh, yeah, that's the bad. That's the bad. We didn't get to see a panther. That's my bad. Yep. Boo.
That was kind of the only thing we did want to see was a panther. I mean, we saw alligators. We saw a snake in a bird's mouth. But we did not know panthers. We didn't really see a lot of mammals, actually, except for humans.
Well, hey, y'all, this was awesome.
Yay.
Yeah, yep, this was cool. Thanks. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thank you. I'm excited.
There we go. Boom. Easy.
Easy peasy.
And there we have it for this little FKT chat with JD and Melinda. Absolutely awesome. And hey, next up, you know, we've got another FKT. We've got Andy Kroom Matthews and his Lollipop 240 journey. So I'm super stoked to hear about that. Can't wait to hear the details. And hey, with that, until next time, happy trails.